You're listening to the Real Witches of the End Times, transmissions straight from the underworld. Doom witches, blood wizards, underworld accountants, and cloud people. Welcome back to the Real Witches of the End Times podcast. I'm your host, Mana Aelin, aka Moth Mana. This week, I'm very excited to have Amy Blackthorn here today. We have a mutual friend of Mortellus, who I was just telling Amy I got one of her wonderful candles in the mail made by Mortellus. It was the Grimoire one. Smells amazing. Shout out there. I'm really grateful that I think it was you commented on a post she'd shared on Facebook about the podcast episode she was on here. I think, was that right?
Yes, it was so great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a great, really, that conversation really is still affected me. I started reading Do I Have to Wear Black? And you wrote the foreword for that. And it was so sweet what you said.
Thank you so much.
Well, if you'd like to introduce yourself for everyone.
Fantastic. I would. My name is Amy Blackthorn. You can find me at amyblackthorn.com. I have been teaching witchcraft, magical assignments, magical worldviews, I would say, since 1999. I've been lucky enough to teach all over the world. I have also combined my love of martial arts and self-defense and magic with my botanical background. I received my degree in botanical studies also in 1999 when I started teaching. So I've gotten to do a lot of worldview expanding for some folks out there. My first book out there is Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, The Green Witch's Guide to Essential Oils for Spellcraft, Ritual, and Healing. My second book is Sacred Smoke. It delves into creating a personalized, very individual sacred smoke practice that does not appropriate from indigenous cultures. And then the most recent book is Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, and that's a potions book. So we delve into creating magical teas, what potions are and how to create them. There are individual chapters like making syrups and sodas for your kitchen. There's all sorts of different magical assignments and projects that go along with that. And so it was a really great opportunity to really dive into your own kitchen and put up some things, especially with spring approaching. Really dive into taking our bounty that the earth has provided with us and saving it for a rainy day.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the types of books that you have out right now. I was listening to one of your interviews about Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, and I think the fact that you dropped about gin and how like gin itself is such a magical substance. I loved that because that's my favorite spirit.
I will tell you that before writing Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, I thought I hated gin. And it turns out I'm just not a fan of battery acid. my favorite gin right now is Uncle Val's Botanical Gin. It was designed after a gentleman's great uncle who had his own garden in Italy. And so it's a cucumber forward gin. So you have that juicy spring flavor in the back of your mouth. But there's sage and lemon and lavender to really enliven it. So it's a beautiful, beautiful gin that I am really entranced with. It's a gorgeous bottle, first of all. I'm going to turn this into a lamp when I'm done with it. But really incredible, especially if you flavor the cucumber-forward gins. It's harder to find some of the ones that aren't rose-heavy since I'm allergic. And this Uncle Val's is just my new favorite thing.
You're allergic to roses?
I'm allergic to rose, yes. Like the growing on the vine, that's fine. Perfectly acceptable. I keep Don Juan climbers on the fences in my yard as an extra layer of protection, which we could talk about. But the perfume rose, the rose essential oils, rose perfumes, I am deathly allergic. Blistering hives allergic. My mother and my sisters all are the same way.
Oh, wow. I have a pretty bad allergy to like almonds. Mm. And that's in so many herbal things too, especially skincare. There was one time I was using a chapstick and I couldn't figure out why my throat hurt every day. And then I looked at the label and was like, God damn it. yeah. So That's so interesting to me. It's funny how people have, I mean, it reminds me of that whole Chiron thing. Cause even Chiron's mm-hmm. like the herbalist, the wounded healer.
Yes.
But I mean, my biggest struggle in my life so far has been my health. Yet I am so interested in herbalism and healing practices because of it.
Exactly. People think, oh, that's kind of odd. And you're like, no, this is protective. This is me making sure that I get to live to see tomorrow.
Yeah, I've read every label on everything I've ever purchased multiple times, except for that chapstick, apparently.
I'm the same way. I subscribe to a couple cosmetic boxes, and I read literally everything because rose is such a common ingredient. It's high in vitamin C. It reduces redness. There's so mm-hmm. much great stuff that it does for the skin, just not mine.
Do you have the same reaction to rose hips?
No. It's technically it's only the Rosa damascene, that's Turkish rose, that I'm allergic to. The English rose, the centifolia, the Rosa cannea, where we get rose hips from, totally fine. Just that one specific rose, and it just so happens to be the one that has the most of the central chemical that rose produces. Those aldehydes is the highest concentration is found in that particular rose. So I only found out because I was raised with my mother being allergic. Like, you couldn't light a rose candle or throat would close up. So I worked at Lush for 5 years. Beautiful. I loved it. I really enjoyed it at the time. And one day I walked in and I was doing a demo of a really gorgeous soft soap that we recommend for poison ivy. And I put it on my skin. I'm demonstrating it on myself. And my skin is now blistering and peeling, and I'm like running for the sink. Like, well, what changed? We had to call headquarters in England and say, what did you do to me? They had updated. They changed from the English rose to the Turkish rose, and they had not yet updated their quantitative list of ingredients, and they didn't think it would be any problems because it's still a rose. Well, I had the blisters to prove it. It was an issue.
Wow. Well, Bruce Lee, he died because of aspirin. He literally never taken aspirin before, and then one day took it just for some mild pain, didn't know he was allergic, and then died.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, this might be just like a good thing to mention to people, because I've been studying herbalism for a couple of years now, and one thing that always seems to blow people away is that your garden variety roses and like rosaceae are like not the same thing. like strawberries and apples and all of that is like it's the rosaceae family, but it's not the same as like the garden roses that you buy at Home Depot, which it sounds like would be really important for you in your life.
Yeah, it's funny because especially in writing botanical brews, really delving into the huge variety that's found within that family. I mean, cherries and blackthorn and apricot, every stone fruit. I mean, they're all within that same family. So it's really incredible to sort of dig in and tease out the little strands of where our botanical families take us, because things that you wouldn't even consider being remotely similar are within that same family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nightshade family is kind of like that too.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
I've got nightshades on the brain. I watched I'm interested a lot in, the spiritual aspect of poison plants, not so much like actually touching them, but just them as working with them as allies, you know, tomatoes or nightshades, but so is Datura and mm-hmm. Mandrake. Very different.
Yeah. And even very different. If, you know, those of you who experiment with the poison path in the physical, I mean, you have the Datura effect for individual poison plants, where that you feel warm and sparkly and like dancing all night and mm-hmm. with glitter and sunshine. And then you have the belladonnas, where you just sort of lay in front of a fireplace and listen to Al Green.
What is your favorite currently of the poison path?
Oh, goodness. There's the Two of Cats is a botanical ointment company that they produce incenses, they produce flaying ointments, all these. It's actually owned and run by Tara Love McGuire, who co-wrote Besom, Stang, and Sword. She has a couple of ones. They're all really gorgeous. One is just mugwort. One is, let's see, Violet Veil has belladonna and vervain in it. It's sweet and soft and sort of romantic feeling. Hedge Rider is the mugwort one. There's the Gorgonium has, it's a poacher pig only. There's no poison in it. So there's patchouli, sage, rosemary, and then they have her beeswax and sunflower base. And then she has a Datura one that's really incredible. But the Two of Cats has some really gorgeous materials. So if it's daytime and I'm working with magic in the daytime hours, which is very rarely because I'm also allergic to the sun. We don't follow each other on Twitter. No, we're not friends. then I'll use the Datura, but the evening hours are more Belladonna, Violet Veil, chill.
Gotcha.
As a matter of fact, the ointment that I'm holding in my hand right now is a batch of mugwort ointment that I made during the pandemic. It was actually harvested under the new moon in Pisces. And then for 3 days, it sat in the slow infuser over the perfect auspices. But because it's a green, not the dried mugwort, my whole kitchen smelled like swamp for 3 days. I wound up scenting it with oak moss, lavender, and petitgrain. Since oak moss is hexbreaking, there's the calming piece of lavender and the blessings of petitgrain. So it's a really great ointment, not just for communing with the spirit of mugwort, but also for breaking and destroying any magic that's been worked against you.
On the subject of protection and all of that, seems like we're going down that route currently. You have a new book coming out later this year on protection magic.
I really do. I'm so excited about this. Blackthorn's Protection Magic is a sort of a spirit melding of all the different disparate parts of myself, sort of all brought into one book. And I'm super excited about it because when I proposed this book to my editor and to my publishers, I didn't include the self-defense aspect because I will say magical taboo of active self-defense being considered harm and people's individual ideas about harm. And so I didn't include it. But my editor, we've known each other personally before I started writing for Wiser. So we've been friends for 11 years now. And she knew that this was such a big part of who I am outside of my writing life, that she really thought it was important to include. And I'm so joyful for it. I've been teaching self-defense also since 99. And it's such an important part because it's something that we don't get a chance to talk about in magical communities. People feel like they're dissuaded from actively protecting themselves in the physical rather than just relying on the magical. And so being able to combine all these pieces of myself, I volunteer in cases of domestic violence to go with petitioners to court. So they have someone not only there as a protective aspect, but there is an emotional support person. I teach concealed carry classes. I teach women's self-defense classes, and I offer all my services for free if someone has a domestic violence, do not contact, whatever your state calls it. I help make sure that these people have the ability to take care of themselves. And it's such an important part of my person. I'm glad that I was able to sort of bring all this stuff together in one place.
I think it's amazing that you've included that in there because I for those listening, Amy and I spoke for a moment before we started recording, and I'd mentioned that even on the episode that's going up right before yours, it's with my friend Paul, and we were talking about like how for us it was specifically martial arts, and then by default self-defense has actually impacted our magical practices and meditation practices and just overall well-being. And it's really hard for me personally to not see things through the lens of that. Now, like even I'm currently reading The Art of War, and it's really hard for me to like not see that as like impactful for magic at the same time. And I think that it's really great that you're including that in your book, because I know from my own experience, like the way I've been able to navigate myself in the world whether I'm walking alone or with people, since getting into martial arts and self-defense has definitely changed. And I'm very grateful for it, especially for the times when I have had to use it.
Absolutely. People don't realize the way in which we change when approaching life as through the lens of a martial artist. I have a friend who is featured in Black Belt magazine a number of years ago, probably 20 years ago. And she was out at a bar, you know, having a girls' night with her friends. And a man came up to her at the bar and attempted to buy her a drink. She made it very clear that she was not interested. She was, you know, enjoying some time with her friends. She was not interested in pursuing any romantic entanglements, you know, of the single light variety, and hoped that that would be it. And unfortunately, it was not. The man in question reached back his hand and open palm slapped her across the face.
Wow.
For the daring to say no to him. As a martial artist, there are a couple ways that she could have dealt with this. What she chose was, you know, frankly, she didn't choose to fall to the floor. It was a significant impact. And rather than jump up and aggress back at him, she played possum for a moment. Oh no, that was so awful. How could he do that? And when he reached his hand back to then punch her in the face, she was able to hook her bottom foot around the back of his ankle and collapse his knee from the front.
Wow.
I will say that that was one of the most empowering stories I've ever heard of someone being able to take care of themselves at a bar when confronted with an aggressor.
Wow. Yeah, that is definitely an impactful story. I'm happy that she is okay.
Yes, I was so happy that she was there to explain what had happened, because boy howdy, there's some things that we have dealt with in our lifetimes that had we not been able to, that would have been disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah. I lived in England a couple of years ago, and it was one of those times where, like, I think some people would describe it as they kind of fell asleep. So, like, I was already into a lot of spiritual, magical things before, but I kind of dropped all of it for that year. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I just got really into drinking and stuff like that instead. And there was a night where I was going to a club with some of my flatmates at the time, and I decided not to drink.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm completely sober tonight. Don't really know why, but I am. I go with them. We have a good time. I just like to dance, so it wasn't a big deal anyway that I wasn't drunk. And some of us were leaving, and then a couple were going to stay back, and I was about to leave, but then I just had a feeling I should stay with one of my friends. And when we ended up walking home later that night in a different group, the two people that were with me were so drunk that I had to carry one of them back. So I was, one, glad I stayed for that reason. But then we ended up in a situation where there was very obviously someone following us back to our apartment. And it's like, I can't even really fully describe to people how grateful I am for even at that point, the small amount of martial arts experience I had, because there's like a mental barrier that you don't really know exists until you end up trying some martial arts things, of like understanding, like putting aside the fear of like, okay, what does it feel like to get punched in the face? All that stuff, which if you experience something similar to that, your brain doesn't fixate on it as much when you're in a pressured situation anymore. It kind of moves on to the next thing, at least in my experience.
Yes.
And so that's where I was at. So it was like, okay, how can I test to see if this person's following me? So I just stopped and let them pass. And as soon as I let them pass, they stopped and looked at a flyer on a pole at 2 o'clock in the morning in the dark, which is weird. And so I kept going, and they started following us behind again. I crossed the street. They slowed their pace to match whatever pace I was at, or if I sped up, they would make sure they were staying the same with me. And then we got to a point where we were in front of our building. And then I had to develop like a plan really quick of like getting my friends inside because there was nowhere else to go and it was dark. And then I was going to, we had an automatic, automatic key door. Mm-hmm. So you can't close it, which I don't know how that's legally allowed, to be honest. Like you can't shut the door. It has to automatically close. But if you motion sensor it, it will just open back up again.
That's not safe at all.
No, it's not. And so I gave like my friends the key and then told them to go do it. And then I was just went in between them and this person who was walking up the street. And my plan was to make sure that they got inside. And then I was just going to book it down to the corner store where there were people. But then they were so drunk that they did not understand what I was trying to express to them. Because they were waiting for me, like, are you going to come inside? I'm like, no.
Danger.
Eventually, yeah. So I ended up going back over to them quickly. They got inside. And then I just stood in the doorway. And I was scared, but, like, not – it wasn't actively affecting me yet because of what the training I had done.
Yes.
And when I turned around just to block the guy from coming inside, I'll never forget. It's like he walked up to the door, stopped, looked at me, and then just saw that I wasn't going to make it easy, essentially. And then he sped up and then walked back down the street and the door shut. I will never forget that specific moment. We went upstairs. The drunk people went to bed. I was like, okay, but I was kind of mad. And then when I woke up the next day, that's when everything hit me. And then I like did not want to leave the apartment all day. I was like, I have completed my adrenaline for the next like foreseeable future. I'm so grateful for martial arts for that. And intuition as well. I don't know what would happen to my friends if I hadn't gone with them.
I agree. That's not only is it super scary, but there's no way for us to know what could have happened. And I'm so thankful that you were there and able to make sure that they were okay.
Yeah. I don't know what I would have done. I mean, if we'd gotten in a physical altercation, because I'd only been going to martial arts for like a month at that point. So, but the mental piece, yeah, for sure. Definitely exists. And you don't know it's there until you experience it kind of leave.
I had been volunteering to help out some friends with a security issue that they were having. So the team of, it was myself and four of my guy friends all helping to remediate some of the issues in security that this establishment had had. It was a very busy night one evening, and my job, you know, is patting down women, make sure as they come into the club that everything is kosher. They're gentlemen are taking care of the male patrons, but obviously they didn't feel comfortable patting down the ladies. And I thought everything was kosher until it was very common at that point when we were first took over the security detail for this establishment for there to be fights at the end of the evening. Okay, the lights come on. You just punch the nearest person to you. It's great. So while we're trying to break up a fight between two guys on the floor, it's very similar to what some law enforcement officers encounter when they have to go in. Respond to a domestic where you're trying to separate parties, but they're not interested in being separated. It can be very difficult. So the woman in question was so adamant that her partner be cared for and respected that she attempted to stab me in the breast with a stiletto.
Whoa.
That was the first time I had that active of an encounter. What people don't recognize, you know, they see movies and you see a circle of eight guys all very calmly and patiently waiting their turn to punch you in the face. They don't realize how quickly things not only happen, but escalate. And before I had even recognized what was happening, my, you know, muscle memory kicked in and I was able to deflect her weapon and place her very gingerly on the concrete and with no damage to her or myself. So everyone got to go home safely that night.
Wow. I'm very grateful for like we did assault drills for like that mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. that specific thing in mind of like, they don't wait for you to get a punch in before they punch back.
People, no, they do not.
There's no care of like even fighting. It's like, if there's a bunch of people who want to kick you, they will at the same time.
37 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of the things I did for my spotlight for my black belt in Taekwondo was have 8 people attack you and show how you're going to deal with this. And it was one of my favorite drills as a new practitioner. But then as my practice developed, it was, you get so many more tools to play with that it was really, really enjoyable for me to figure out the puzzle of this moving dance that was happening in front of me.
Yeah, the adrenaline. Man, like I...
Yeah.
So many of my hobbies are dangerous to myself. Like, I'll leave... Like, I'm also an aerialist, so I'm like, yeah. Or I just went... I'm trying to do this thing now where I go roller skate the same path every day for 7 days in a row. I'm, mm-hmm. like, falling all over the place because I'm still learning that. And like, I think I find some satisfaction in like being partially hurt at the end of every day.
A day without pain is a day without sunshine.
Yeah, I think part of that is maybe why I'm also kind of drawn to the poison path a little bit. With respect, like, I'm not trying to like poison myself. That's not ideal at all. but there is like that. I don't know. I'm willing to gamble a little bit.
And those plants are deserving of care and respect. And
totally.
People, like, it's not about fear. These plants are there and they are reaching out to work with us, especially... The deterras in this area are so overwhelming. The number and variety of their, you know, the Mattels and the, you know, everyone's got their own special spot. I just adore them so much.
Mm-hmm. I have a elixir with a couple of flower essences from Persephone's Path.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Soli. The intention of it when I got this one. That she talks about a lot in a lot of her teachings is like shadow integration and like helping you face that bear.
Yes.
And I found the tour of this flower essence has like really impacted that for me. So I've just been, I mean, the past year has been hard, but like in general for lots of people. but there's been a lot of different things that I didn't realize were specifically shadow aspects for myself that this specific flower essence, it has two species of Datura. It's the Enoxia and Strominium. It's been really helpful. I mean, and the dreams are weird. And the one fun fact with like, because I saw one thing one time about Datura being like a dream plant, like for dreams. But then It's like, I feel like it's more so of like night terrors in a way. That type of dream. So oftentimes the poison is the medicine too. So to me, that makes sense why this would be potentially helpful for people for shadow work.
Absolutely. If you just want some dreams, like go talk to mugwort. If you need to deal with those night terrors, then the especially the Stramonium, you know, go and make some friends, but
mm-hmm.
don't just walk in with your that there's a very common understanding of how Americans travel the world and how Americans are seen, and we sort of stumble into that when we talk to our plant allies as well. We're like, oh, you don't speak English, like, you know, walking in big loud hands everywhere, sneakers, and why are you just conforming to what it is that I desire? We need to be travelers and not tourists
when we
talk to our plant allies.
Yeah, absolutely. Plant allyship. Yeah, I'm glad you used that word, because it's like we're not using the plants. We're building a relationship, and it's at its best mutually beneficial to the plant.
We're very careful not to use that word use, because if that's the relationship that you have with other beings, like there's something wrong with mm-hmm. that worldview, and you need to take a look at that.
And Godspeed if you try to use a poisonous plant.
They're gonna have some feelings about that.
Yeah. I read something, and I don't know if you'll know the answer to this. No worries if you don't. This is just off the cuff here. I was reading about how like one of the possible antidotes to foxglove is belladonna.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Oh, yes. They because they both work on the heart, they actually work in opposite actions. So definitely do not do this at home. But mm-hmm. yes, the way that they're the way that they meter themselves in your bloodstream, as well as the action they have on the cardiovascular system, they sort of have opposite reactions.
Okay. Wow, that's so cool. I'm glad that's true. I would have been sad if it wasn't.
It's funny. Nature has a way of doing that. When you look at poison ivy, you often find jewelweed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
mm-hmm.
find nettles by accident, and you find plantain to take the sting.
Yeah.
Nature has a very gentle way of helping us remediate our blunders. You know, look at the way that you talk and we interact with plants. The plants that we're attracted to. I adore the smell of viburnum flowers.
I don't know if I've ever smelled them.
Oh my God, it's the most intoxicating smell. I mean, people say, oh, roses or jasmine or gardenia. Viburnum flowers are the single most attractive floral scents that I can name. They're wow. enchanting and they're entrancing, and they sort of lure you in with these tiny little delicate flowers that are sort of whispering to you, like, come talk to us. And then you look at what viburnum is. Do you know?
No. I can't think of it in my head.
It's sold in witchy bookstores and herb shops as devil's shoestring.
Oh, okay.
See? So yeah. when you're attracted to this beautiful, intoxicating flower, it's really telling you, oh, hey, I can really help you out with this. So, mm-hmm. you know, planting viburnums as a border plant is very common. You know, putting it in landscaping is very common. You're actually protecting your home, and you're protecting your space with that beautiful, intoxicating plant. There's actually one planted at the end of my driveway for just such an occasion.
Yeah, I try to explain that kind of that idea about plants and like when you're attracted to them as like part of like the language that they speak with you, mm-hmm. like with plant consciousness to people during readings or sessions, because sometimes I'll do like bibliomancy mm-hmm. for like messages from plants, not like medicinally specifically, but like just what they represent or folklore and things. And oftentimes, like, I just think when plants come up even like that, or when you think about a plant a lot and then find out it's growing all around your house and you have no idea, like it's like this ambient fog or of consciousness that's how I imagine how they speak, at least to me, in my experience. It's like I'll end up in this cloud and I'll get really fixated on something randomly out of the blue. And then to find out I've just been surrounded by it for weeks or months.
That's absolutely been my experience. In the Green Witchcraft tradition, we practice a lot of time. We take a lot of time and energy in learning to speak the language of the plants and what are they offering to you. And one of the best ways that we do that is proximity. So you get to know your yard or your land or the plant space around you, whether you're in an apartment and walking to work and you find a dandelion growing out of the sidewalk, or whether, you know, Salvia inflata appears in your garden bed one day. I mean, there's individual messages that are being expressed. You just have to stop long enough to listen.
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, I was taking care of the yard and was doing my gardening thing. And I noticed that all of a sudden, with no warning, poke had seeded itself along the border of my fence around the backyard. It's very dark. It's very shaded. We border a park, a wildlife refuge. So it's very wooded. It's very thick. And so it's not something that ordinarily would have planted itself in that spot because it's not bright enough for it to bury. I'm like, okay, what are you trying to tell me? Well, I use poke in protection magic very frequently. You can actually create a beautiful ink out of its berries. But one of the things about poke ink is that it fades over time. So what I do is I have a special journal dedicated to my anxieties, my fears, things that require active protection work get written out in that journal. And as time progresses, it fades from memory, just like those anxieties and those worries.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So what was poke trying to tell me? Okay, that there's something that needs protection that I need to pay attention to. it turned out that the place where I was currently employed, I had a stalker. A man who worked in my building had become fixated on me, and I needed to take very active steps. It turned out that he stalked me for 6 months, and brought up he had a plan. Content warning. He had a plan to kidnap, rape, and murder me.
And oh my God.
Leave my body on a local beach. Like, he had this down to the moment. He knew where my second job was. He knew where the doors I was coming out. He figured out all these things and had this active plan. So Poke was really letting me know, like, this is danger. this is not something that just happened upon. This is something that's been building for a while and needs to be taken care of now. So it's very interesting as a martial artist, as a self-defense instructor, men tell women and femaligned individuals all these magic buttons that we're supposed to push to never be the victim of a crime. You know, make sure you park in well-lit areas and wear your hair in a ponytail, because apparently if it's in a ponytail, it's less likely to be grabbed. I don't know. All these magic things that we're supposed to do to protect ourselves. And I had done them. I had been doing them for 10 years, 15 years. And it was still happening. When I was able to report him to the police and get him taken off the streets, however momentarily, I asked him, I said, look, I'm doing all the things they tell you to do. I make sure that I take care of myself and I park in the right places and I do the right things and I make known that I'm not interested. I've done all those things. Why is this happening? And he said, he gets off on the thrill. He wants to see which of you is better. So no matter how prepared we are, there's always going to be something else out there that's either as well prepared as we are or better. So you have to be really paying attention to the things that are going on around you. Unfortunately, even going through all the proper channels and making sure that all my I's were dotted and my T's were crossed, he admitted to the judge in court with a lawyer his intention to carry out his plan, that he attempted to carry out his plan. He didn't just plan it. He actually made the attempt. He was sentenced to 1 year probation.
Holy fuck.
Yes. So even if we do the right things, the criminal justice system isn't always on our side. So it's really important that you take as best care as you can of yourself and those close to you. Now, the very minute he was no longer on paper, he was off probation, he got a job at my grocery store just to prove that he could find me to get to me.
Oh my God.
The way the law in Delaware is written, if you have a no contact order, their version of a protection order, and you want to renew it because they only last for 1 year, I don't know why this is even a thing. If you had to go to the court in the first place, why this should lapse. But if it lapses and you want it reinstated, you have to have 3 encounters within a 6-month period with this person for the court to reissue it. Wow. So he would pop up in my worldview, in my area, in my daily runnings, 2 times. And then he'd wait 6 months and 1 day, and then he'd pop up again. And this has gone on for, we're going on close to 10 years now.
And he's still doing that?
He's still an issue. He's still a problem. One of the things that prison did for him, and this has been other victims' advocacy groups have noticed, this is also a trend there, is that it made him better at being a criminal. If you are a sensitive listener, I might skip 30 seconds starting from now. His original crime was the sexual assault of a boy under 11 years old.
Oh my God.
And he did some prison time, which even at that point is very, very rare. And he learned in prison that most employers who bother to run a background check do a state background check, because the federal background check is much more expensive, invasive, time consuming, what have you. So what he did was, the moment he got out of jail in Pennsylvania, he moved to Delaware. We're in the very upper corner where you can get to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland within 10 miles or so. So every time he offends and he gets arrested and he does whatever penalty is assigned to him, he moves to the new state so he can get another job with a clean background, because everyone's just doing state background checks.
Oh my gosh. How did you end up finding out about the plan?
He told me.
What?
It was just after Black Friday. I was working a second job in retail and going to school full time. So I had a full time job, a part time job, and full time school. So I was constantly exhausted. So right after Black Friday came and went, he was the chef, the cook, whatever, you know, he was one of the culinary professionals in the building where I was head of security. So I came in, you know, I'd been avoiding him. He'd been showing up at my car. He would wait out in the bushes for over a half an hour for me to get off work after he got off work. It was an issue. So I came in to grab my lunch one day, and he says, "You look tired." I don't know why people think that this is appropriate to tell another human that they look bad.
No.
Stop doing that to people. But also, you know, I went to the other end of the cafeteria, and I find my place to sit, and he's boldly staring at me, not even blinking, multiple moments at a time. I find a different place to sit. I figure, you know, I just keep going out of my way to avoid conflict with this person. And as I'm leaving the cafe that after my lunch break, he starts again with this, "Oh, you look tired." Like, look, I am working two jobs and I'm going to school full time. I'm bound to be tired. It's none of your business. This is after he had shown up at the mall. He had heard that I worked at the mall and showed up looking for me during my work hours, where I wouldn't be able to just leave and evade him. Well, he didn't know where I worked in the mall. So he showed up with coffee or tea or some sort of beverage that I was ostensibly going to share with him on the clock. And he got so very angry when I explained to him that that's not happening. "Well, I couldn't find you." So it's already escalated to the point where he's trying to find me in other places. So he says, "Oh, well, if you're that tired, maybe I will just A, B, C, X, Y, Z," and lays it out at noon in a busy building where there's people around everywhere. Like, this wasn't in the middle of the night or in the darkness of the night where ostensibly only bad things happen at when it's dark outside.
Wow.
And I had to go and report into the police, and he was arrested and released right out. His mother is someone of status in our state, and apparently she had the money to back it up. So he was released on bail or his own recognizance, what have you, moments after he was arrested. So I had no choice but to find a way to protect myself. In the state of Delaware, it's a may issue state for concealed carry licenses. So they do 6 months worth of background check to make sure that you're upright and moral enough to be able to carry a firearm in the defense of your own life. But it's also an open carry state. So without a license, without a piece of paper, you can put a firearm on your person and go about your daily business. So I had to open carry to save my actual life, because there's no bad guy on the planet who's going to say, "Oh, can you come back in 6 months when I'm allowed to defend myself? That'd be great. I appreciate you."
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in an anti-gun household. I wasn't one of the kids who gets raised with firearms and respect for their ability and their necessity. I never thought that I would be someone who depended on a firearm to save her life. I never thought I'd need to carry it. Even when I started learning to utilize firearms in a sporting way, I never thought I'd carry one. I just thought I'd enjoy shooting, you know, punching holes in paper and going home. I was very lucky to have the ability to take care of my own safety and my own protection. Because the day he was arrested, they found him with chloroform in his car. They found him with a kit in his car. He had admitted to being outside of my second job, waiting for me. He had done this before, and he will do it again. The last woman he stalked before myself, he was arrested. Again, found with chloroform in his car. But because his mother is whoever she is, I honestly don't know, the political clout that she had, this woman, in fear for her life, left the state before he could be prosecuted. Fled the state because she was so scared of this man and the things that he had planned to do. Wow. And so all the wishes and the hopes and the harm none out there aren't going to convince this person to stop what they're doing. He's done it before, and he will do it again.
Do you find that this whole experience, and that you're continually experiencing now, was a main motivator for the current book?
It was. And it wasn't, and it was. When I first thought about it, I wanted to help people understand and embrace their own protection. But it was so hard to write this book. It took a little bit longer than I expected it to, because of the emotional fallout of dealing with this. I had moments of imposter syndrome. How can I be someone who has had their life threatened on a continuing basis and be able to tell someone how to protect themselves? And my incredible, amazing godsend of an editor said, "Sweetheart, that's why we want you. We want somebody who knows what they're talking about. We want somebody who has expressed and experienced these things to save someone else." So in writing Blackthorn's Protection Magic, the first draft, in the capable hands of my editor, the self-defense chapter is currently 13,000 words. So we'll be managing that itself. But included is what to do if someone's following you. How to escape handcuffs. How to escape duct tape. How to escape rope. How to escape zip ties. How to take care of yourself and make sure that you are safe, even if the world isn't.
Thank you for sharing all of that. I know with various different things, it can be healing to talk about it, but also it's hard.
Yeah, and both things are true.
Both are true, for
stuff
sure.
Stuff can be two things.
Can be so many things at once. Like, I think we talked about this. I can't remember if it was before we recorded or right at the beginning of the episode, about how we often become so knowledgeable about the things that continually be our Achilles heel in life at the same time, or the Chiron, wounded healer.
Yes.
That's so true. With this subject matter too. Like, I have not had at all the same experience you have, but there's been different various things that I have experienced that have also led me to be interested in all of this type of stuff, self-defense, security. Ironically, even though I have like a broadcasting internet job, I'm also extremely concerned about my personal life.
Absolutely. Take classes and workshops, whatever, on skip tracing. It will serve you well.
Yeah. Okay. I'll write that down. Skip tracing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Being able to find people who don't want to be found.
It's that practical aspect of, you got the magic, but also you got to know what, like, you have an idea of what it is you're protecting yourself against too. And there is not all the time. You're not always battling a wizard. Sometimes it's a creepy neighbor. So you have to know on a 3D level what's going on in addition. So I think that self-defense piece to your book is crucial.
If I had one suggestion for listeners, it is trust your instincts. Even if you have a history of anxiety and you think everything is, you know, probably could be an issue, that would be me. Mm-hmm. Listen to your instincts, because they're telling you something is wrong. The day that I started at this post, my partner, Bill, who, God love him, was one of the best partners I ever had. The very first day, one of the very first things he said to me was he saw this man walking outside on a smoke break with his victim of the moment, was, "You stay away from him." I said, "Okay, I believe you." He says, "No, really, stay away from him. You see that woman with him? You know, they all look like that at the end. They're beaten down. They're dejected. They have no self-confidence. That's what he does to people. So avoid him." And he's just the creepiest person that no one ever wanted to meet. So trust your instincts. Even if Bill had never said anything, it's just one of those people who makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Like, you know that small animals are not safe around this person.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's so much pressure, especially on women and femmes, around, like, wanting... I mean, there's a time and place for giving people benefit of the doubt, you know? I feel like I don't have to, like, make that caveat, but it's there. But there's some... I mean, I catch myself with that. I'll get that feeling around people, and then I'll be like, no, I need to be nice. No, I need to do this and that. And then... when I got older, I started to realize that pressure is put solely on us.
Yes.
And that is dangerous.
I have worked as a citizen sleuth in different arenas and different varieties, because I cannot any longer do private detective work, private security work, things like that. And one of my favorite true crime podcasts has a saying for that, to which I have now ascribed onto a keychain that I carry with me at all times. My keychain says, "Fuck politeness."
Because, oh, my favorite murder.
Yes. because women have been socially conditioned to be appeasing and soft and gentle and always give the benefit of the doubt and always do this and never do that, instead of just allowing people to embrace their feelings and their understandings of how a situation is going. One of the things that I had to talk about was specifically for victims of violent crime, was people are going to want to understand what happened, why it happened, and it can very quickly turn into victim blaming. What they want is to understand why it happened so it doesn't happen to them. And it is perfectly okay for you to explain to them that you don't have to explain it to them. I don't need to, I'm not going to. Or to tell them, "I love you, but I can't talk with you about this right now. So I will write you a note if you need it. I'm a notary, I'll stamp it." But you do not have to explain yourself or your lived experiences to anyone.
Yeah. I'm having to remind myself of that, especially right now in my life, to be honest. It's weird, and I'm sure you can understand this too, when you have things happen, or in general in your life, but you also are somewhat of have an audience of mm-hmm. some extent, because yes. It's like things can change in your life, like what you're interested in, who you're talking to, pretty quickly, and then people don't know, and then obviously you never want to address anything publicly, because like, why? Unless it's like a dangerous situation that people need to know about. But it's hard sometimes, like, just to find, because I know in my work I like being personable with people, like sharing stories, like what you've talked about, meeting people through the podcast in this way is why I enjoy it. Like, if I had to sit here and come up with 50 questions where I would answer and you give me a direct answer back and forth for an hour, I would hate it, and I would not. But this podcast would not exist. That's not why I do it. But it's still like, how do people find, how do you keep yourself safe in this, doing that, this job? or, you know, being open about your own, for yourself, like your own magical practice and your work and everything, finding that balance between safety, being sincere and genuine, being open, sharing your own experiences, and then still maintaining boundaries. It's like a constant juggling thing. I'm new at all this stuff, still, and I've definitely made mistakes and I'm learning from that. But, do you have any advice in general for that juggling balance situation?
Yes, it is one, especially when you're first starting out, is sit down with yourself and try and make a list of the things that you are and are not comfortable talking about, because it's such a delicate balancing act, balancing your desire to be vulnerable and have that vulnerability be connected with. And there's this idea that if someone is renowned, known, famous is such a trite word, but if you connect with people through your audience, there can be this expectation that of access, where they should be able to know everything about you, where you go, where you sleep, who you're dating, like anything that's really vulnerable and personal. And that's not okay. So understanding where you are and where your boundaries need to be is the best first step in making sure that your boundaries are respected. Because if you don't know where they are, how can you articulate that to someone else? So understanding the things that you will and won't talk about, it's a great place to start with maintaining your own boundaries and your personal safety. I don't talk about my life at home. I don't talk about my relationships. I'll post pictures of my dog, but I'm not going to post identifying information about my home. Mm-hmm. You know, I very narrowly talk about the state in which I reside, but it's very close to being it, because unfortunately we have to deal with some of these issues. And no matter how well-meaning someone is, once they have shown that they don't respect your boundaries, that's something that needs to be dealt with very quickly, because it can escalate. A dear friend of mine recently had one such issue where a group invited them to come and speak, talk about their book, and they wanted to friend this author on Facebook. And they got very scary is a gentle word. It escalated very quickly when it became understood that that's not what we're doing here. My personal home people are accessed here, and I talk about my family. There are pictures of my kids. Like, this isn't for fan consumption. You can join my Facebook group and we can talk about things there, but you're not guaranteed access to my private life because you purchased a book that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And it can be very scary, whether it's through a podcast or, you know, through Facebook memes or any other such thing, where people think that they know you, and it's very interesting how they react to it. I mean, they develop this understanding that, you know, you guys are best friends because they read your book and they had access to a very vulnerable part of yourself. And so it can be difficult for them to understand that there need to be boundaries in place. It's a popular saying that the only people that benefit from you not having boundaries are the ones that want to make sure that you continue not to have them. So allowing yourself to remember and maintain those boundaries is incredibly important, not just for your sanity, but for your personal safety as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on for me on, like, I don't know, an astrological level in addition to everything here, but I've just definitely been thinking about that so much more. I feel maybe this is a shared thing too, and this is just how it's manifesting with me, but I'm just really trying to contain my own energy as like an inward thing right now. Like, as much as I again do have like a job that requires me to kind of have that active expansion of, you know, yelling my voice into the void of the internet world. Mm-hmm. But I also am just not interested in really expansive stuff right now. Like, I'm just trying to like get everything to a point within myself. Not so much high priestess, but more of like like a hermit.
Yes.
Energy. That's just how I really feel, especially the past couple of months. And it seems to be showing up in a lot of people around me too. So is that something that you're experiencing?
Oh, yes. People are getting to the point where they understand that the world has changed, but they still feel that need and desire to connect with people. And honestly, after spending a year on Zoom, everyone's tired of accommodating, and they'd like to be able to reach out and connect, even in that wisdom aspect of the hermit. And you have to remind them that, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. We're still on this ride, and it's going to continue for a while. Even though we want it to be over, It's not quite ready. It's not quite done with us. So even, you know, making sure that we're all vaccinated and taking care of ourselves and our loved ones does not mean that it's over and that things, quote, go back to the way they were, because where they were, that was broken.
Yeah. I'm not interested in going back to normal, if that's correct. What normal was. No, thank you.
How about no?
So I'm curious with the other aspects of your protection book. We talked a lot, and I'm glad we have talked a lot about the self-defense aspect, but what other categories do you outline?
I wanted this to be a one-stop shop, because I found witchcraft, and I found Wicca, witchcraft, paganism at 11.
Whoa.
So my, as you can imagine, my budget was very limited. So, so I want this to be I want people to have the ability to buy one book and get everything they could ever need. So I talk about essential oils for protection magic. I talk about crystals for protection magic. Creating your own boundaries and shields. So there's an entire chapter on psychic development for protection. So no matter what aspect, there's candle magic for protection. There's each individual au vieux, so to speak, is discussed from a strictly protection magic standpoint. So I hope to continue doing these, you know, prosperity magic and so on and so forth. I want people to have the access they need to create their own magical ideas. I want to teach people to write their own spells, so you don't see the 87 groups that you're in. Oh, can someone send me a spell? You have permission to write your own spells. So I want to teach people, especially with Blackthorn's protection magic, or Blackthorn's botanical magic, was really important for me to be able to teach people how to do things for themselves. I don't need people to follow me. I want to have people who want to walk beside me. I want to teach you to do these things for yourself. So Blackthorn's protection magic has a little bit of everything for everyone. So if you have an essential oil, or you have a few herbs, or you have a candle, you have everything that you need. I just want to teach you how to use it.
I love that. I love that you mentioned essential oils too, because that's a key point of one of your other books, Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, which you said was your first book. That's the one I have. It's funny because I saw you comment again on Martellus's post about the episode they were on my podcast, and I looked over at my bookshelf and was like, why does this name seem familiar? I was like, wait a second. I remember when I bought this book, it was a couple of years ago, and I was in Barnes & Noble, and I love the cover. Like, to be honest, that was why I originally bought it.
It's so gorgeous and beautiful. I love it. As a matter of fact, last week, the French edition of Botanical Magic was released, and it's the same, you know, the cover is also black, but it's very French. It's delicate and stylish and chic and beautiful. And I'm just like, these amazing publishers are just making me sound so much better than I am. The covers are incredible. The Polish edition of Blackthorn's Botanical Brews came out 2 weeks ago, and it's a full color, and there's beautiful cocktails and all these expensive, beautiful colors and covers and oh, it just looks like a beautiful meadow that you want to lay down in and read all day.
Oh, wow.
It's incredible that I looked at my partner and said, I can't believe that this is my life. Like, this is, are you serious? This is, people in Poland know who I am.
I would love, I don't know the practicality of this, but because so many of all of your books, it sounds like, have the framework of like Blackthorn's insert tome name here. If you had like these magical hardbound embossed versions that you could get as a whole set, because it just, that sounds like a Harry Potter book set.
Yes, where they're all generally the same height, so the spines all line up real pretty.
Yeah, your name is perfect for that too. I really admire that you have so much about, like, because, you know, we've talked about this earlier, but like essential oils are everywhere right now and they're awesome, but also there's so much misinformation, and you go into it in Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, and I'm sure you'll allude to it too on the Protection Magic book, like what they actually are, how they can be actually really dangerous if you drink them.
Stop using them internally. This is not a thing. Don't do it. It's a very specific application for essential oils that is conflated with going to a doctor and a pharmacy and a prescription. Like, don't just practice medicine on your own because you think it's cool. Stop using essential oils internally.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize when you have such a high concentration of volatile oils that normally in like leaves in a tea or even a tincture it's not as strong as they are in an essential oil. So you can have a plant that normally wouldn't bother you, but then you keep taking it internally as an essential oil, and then eventually you develop a sensitivity to it at best. At worst, you would have an immediate reaction or actually like receive a chemical burn internally.
I have dealt, especially with things like lemon. Oh, I put a squeeze of lemon in my water. Why can't I put 3 drops of lemon essential oil in there? And you're like, you have to explain to someone that a squeeze of lemon is much different than 30 pounds of lemon. You know, a squeeze of lemon is fine, but you sit there and choke down 30 pounds of lemon, then you're going to have some difficulties.
Yeah. There's that quote by Paracelsus.
Yes!
It's like, I forget, I do not have it memorized, but the gist of it is that anything is a poison.
Yes. I always substitute it with the more popular version, Terry Pratchett talking about all fungi are edible. Some are only edible once.
I love that. Oh my God. Can you imagine monkshood essential oil? Holy shit.
Wow. I just got goosebumps on my arms. I mean, mugwort essential oil is bad enough / awesome enough. If you know what you're doing, it's the fact that it's available to people who have no idea what they're doing terrifies me.
Oh, well, if that wasn't even what I said. I said monkshood.
Yes, yes. I'm just going with something even a little less. Oh my goodness. Yes. So the things that we have available to us can be very dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, it's, there's like, you know, the pendulum swing too, because there's so much disinformation, but they're also still really cool, but there's almost now like a complete stigma on them where people bring them up and it's like, oh, you're one of those MLM people. It's like, no, not always either. But I'm just glad that you talk about it. Like, I'm glad there's just a source that I know references essential oils, talks about them a lot, and then actually gives a specific warning.
Very favorite part about Blackthorn's Botanical Magic is in the indices in the back, there's methods you can use to test the integrity of the essential oils that you're using. So if you, you know, no matter where you bought it from, you can test to see if it's been adulterated in an unscrupulous manner. There's a lot of companies out there who will add different various chemicals so they can water down your oil. And there's no reason to do it. There's no beneficial way of taking this beautiful volatile, the soul of this plant, and watering it down. I mean, if you're going to dilute it with a carrier oil, that's perfectly fine. Just let people know what you're doing. Things like Jasmine Absolute or lemon balm, you know, those absolutes are so expensive. Frankincense can be incredibly expensive. and getting to the point where people understand that that's why it's diluted so you can afford to buy it is much different than having someone put literal water into this oil just so they can get more money out of it for themselves. I mean, there's scrupulous and unscrupulous ways of doing these things. And being able to empower someone who's read my book to really take the moment to see what they've purchased and what they've spent their money on is really important. So totally. It's just giving people that extra bit of access and understanding for what they're doing.
Yeah. So Blackthorn's Botanical Magic has been out for a bit. People can find it now if they're interested in it. When is the projected date, or is there one, for your protection magic book?
The original projected date was January, but I'm hoping that because I turned it in when I did, that perhaps it could be bumped up to something like October.
Okay, cool.
So once they're absolutely kept, your local booksellers and ask them if they can pre-order it from Wiser Books. And keep an eye out from where you... wherever you order your fine books there. I always have, when they're released, I always have autographed copies available on blackthornsbotanicals.com or amyblackthorn.com. So you can check out those autographed copies if you like there. There's always on Amy Blackthorn Author on Facebook, there's always whatever the current book is, there's always sneak peeks, and there's usually a few pages. The first 50 pages of Botanical Magic are available for free download. The first 30 pages of Sacred Smoke and Botanical Brews are available for download, so you can check them out and know that it's something that interests you when you actually purchase it.
Perfect. And if people would like to find you all over the place, they're interested in what you're doing, catching up on or staying updated on book release dates on Instagram and such, where can they find you?
Instagram is Amy Blackthorn Author. You can find me on Facebook through Amy Blackthorn Author as well. I also have a couple other spots. You can find my podcast, The Blackthorn Grove, on Facebook, as well as Witchcraft Down and Dirty, which is just ridiculous memes and humor, witchcraft-related humor. So Witchcraft Down and Dirty is, goodness, it's coming up on 8-9 years. Oh my goodness. So check out those places. Again, you can find me at amyblackthorn.com and blackthornsbotanicals.com for my tea shop, for those magical teas, a little bit of self-care for yourself. There's also spell candles, and some of the oil blends from Blackthorn's Botanical Magic are available for sale if there's harder to find ingredients, if they're things like that. Oak moss absolute can be hard to find, so my hex shattering oil from Blackthorn's Botanical Magic is available for sale there in a perfume roll-on. It smells incredible. Oak moss is the natural / botanical insert for, instead of using a leather that's synthetic. So synthetic leather is the only thing that actually triggers my migraines as far as scent goes.
Wow.
But the Oak moss absolute oil smells like leather and violets.
Oh my gosh.
It's incredible. It really is. It's one of my favorite things. And it's the lichen that grows on your trees. You look outside your door and those beautiful green circles gracing the trees outside, that's oak moss. That's waiting for you to develop that relationship. And it's perfect for hex shattering, hex breaking work. If you live in a place like Florida that has a year-round growing cycle, it gets so big that it'll actually fall off of the trees. It's not the live oak Spanish moss. It is the flat green moss that grows on traditional trees, not live oak. But you can absolutely find pictures of it on Google Image Search, whatever search engine you use. It's an incredible ally to work with. I actually have some poppets that are stuffed with that collected oak moss that is very useful for hex shattering, you know, making sure that anything that's been cast against you is now no longer viable. I remember from your interview that you talked with Mortellus about the corpse water that they provide, also brilliant bit of magical mastery, giving yourself the essence of death. So those spells, hexes, curses, jinxes cast against you, then fall away. I'm just always entranced by the things that Mortellus comes up with.
Oh my gosh, yes. We can plug Mortellus's stuff too, mortellus.com. For all your necromancy needs, seriously, check it out.
Soaps, cool candles, stuff. Materia, check it out. They're amazing.
Oh gosh. man, I'm planning on, once I finish their book, to have Mortellus on again.
it's such an incredible book. I told Mortellus when I started writing the foreword, I'm just going to buy a case of these books and I'm handed out like Oprah. You get one and you get one and you get one, because there's something for literally everyone, because unfortunately all of us will pass away at some point. So having your family and loved ones know what you want as your final wishes is really important. So doing things like writing an ethical will and writing a living will are really important. So everyone should own, do I have to wear black?
I cried reading the acknowledgments.
I cried a few times reading this book, and I was pretty put out by it. Like, I did not come here to cry. What are you doing to me?
In the underworld chapter, because Mortellus read that part of that on the podcast live, and like reading it in the book again, I was like transported back to that, which made me cry the first time I heard it. And I'm like, ah, what is going on?
I was listening to your interview with Mortellus as I'm cooking dinner. I'm standing over the stove cooking, and I'm like, tears are rolling down my face. I'm sobbing quietly. They're like, what is, the dogs are looking at me like there's something wrong with me.
I got so many messages about that episode. People were like, I probably shouldn't have been driving in 5 o'clock traffic when I listened to
this. You're just sobbing quietly to yourself. What is wrong with me?
Yeah, it's the way Mortellus writes.
Yes.
That's the kicker for the crying.
Every, you know, the things that they say are so pronounced. Profound and pronounced came out pronoun. I am thankful every day that Mortellus is someone who has come into my life. They actually introduced themselves at Mystic South in 2019. We were in line together at picking up really beautiful things from the Radiant Crone in Nashville. They're one of the vendors at the event. And so we found ourselves in line, and she said, you know, I can't. She came to my ancestor work through aromatherapy workshop. I do have it on blackthornsbotanicals.com. You can purchase it. It's a 2-hour lecture, but it's creating aromatic triggers to honor deceased loved ones. So people talked about the scent of their mom's perfume and their grandfather's tobacco pipe and these really evocative memories that we find ourselves embracing that scent. So it's an incredible workshop, but she came up and introduced herself right after and said, oh, I'm excited. And, you know, it's lovely to meet you. I'd love to have you to, you know, my home, and we can enjoy each other's company talking about magic and witchcraft and our ideals. And I feel like one of the luckiest people that when things like that happen, you know, I grew up a very anxious person, and I never want to push anyone else's boundaries. So I'm very reserved, and I was really worried that, you know, people would feel that I was standoffish because I'm shy until I get to know someone. And so the fact that she came up and said, oh, hey, hi, I'm Mortellus and you're awesome, was really a beautiful turning point in my life, because I am ever thankful that they're a part of my life.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that Mortellus reached out to me. I think they found me because I used hashtag necromancers of Instagram on one of my posts. I think that's literally what did it.
That's awesome.
So that tag works if you're also interested in that. People are finding each other and having meaningful encounters. So, well, thank you again for being here. Is there anything else that you wanted to plug before I plug my stuff?
Come and check out some tea things. I'm really excited about the candles that I worked on during the original lockdown for the pandemic. So I'm holding my Hex the Patriarchy candle and my My necromancy candle, which is the other side for mediumship, for ritual, for honor. It contains oak moss, since we were chatting about it. There's bergamot, and there's mandarin and lemon. So it really has this comforting scent that reminds you that it's all going to be okay. And the Hex of Patriarchy candle has a lot of vetiver in it, and so it smells like a witch's succulent garden.
Mm. Well, if you're listening to this and you'd like to find me, you can find me at mothmana.com for a gallery of my digital art and information on readings if I have any up to schedule. And you can also find me on Instagram at mothmanatarot, Twitter at manaalin. And if you would like to support this podcast and join the hordes in my Underworldian city, that's going to be patreon.com/mothmana. And every month they have a bonus exclusive interview with someone, as well as many other things. So come check it out. And again, thank you for being here, Amy. This was a really nice conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.